seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner. I've caddied for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course, well, that's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course, we want to play at the weekend.
Welcome along to Golf Weekly. We are back for the FedEx series. We apologise for skipping our post-US PGA review. Nathan is here alongside me. Hello.
How are you?
Very good. And Fionn Davenport, currently in Colombia. Actually, that's just the way he rolls. Yeah, he's in Colombia.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Fairly sure.
I saw him putting up pictures in Edinburgh this morning.
Well, I mean, I don't want to give insights into how a travel writer may or may not work.
I know that, but I thought he was actually in.
He could be. I think he's going to Colombia on Monday.
What's he doing in Colombia?
He's spending 4 days there as part of some travel junket.
Wow.
Isn't that something?
Is he going to be safe? Who would touch him? He's untouchable.
I think he'll be fine, Donald Trump. so it's all business class and nice job and 4 days there.
I hate him.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Because he spent his actual holiday around Lake Garda. Did you see that?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, it looked very nice. Dave McIntyre here, of course.
Well, I'm a lowly stand-in for Fionn. I'm just going to have to do my best.
Lowly stand-in who's here most weeks, one way or another.
Fionn's now filling in for
at
you.
At what stage does that become the case? We'll see.
Yeah, so we apologise for missing the USPGA bumper review. People were on holidays, just wasn't possible for various reasons. But we're back for the FedEx series. There's much to discuss. Your tweets are in on a whole host of different matters. My favourite tweet of the week was Dave Green. Per misguided Dave Green, who sent us a video of his swing and asked us, yes, us, any tips, greatly appreciated lads, hashtag golf analysis, hashtag friend of the pod, hashtag drive for show, put for dough. Dave, we're not the people to ask at all.
But since you've asked.
Yeah, I mean, the only advice is to go to as good a pro or teacher as you can. I mean, it struck me, there's something off with your grip, the way the club came back, there's something funny there, but I wouldn't dare to say any more than that.
In a year's time, we'll hear from Dave, is it?
Yeah.
Dave saying, Joe Malloy said, there's something with my grip. I changed it. I've dropped 10 shots from my handicap.
Yeah, I'm in jail. My life spiraled out of control from that moment. I mean, I thought it looked like a fine swing. Perfectly acceptable. Not a million miles away at all, Dave. But Jesus, don't ask us for advice.
When did he send this in?
August 22nd.
What's his name?
Dave Green.
That's yesterday.
Yesterday.
I'll have a go. By the end of this podcast, Dave, we'll have your swing completely deconstructed and rebuilt.
If Dave is giving Dave golf tips, we're all in trouble.
Well, no one has spent more time on the technicalities of their swing in the last 2 months than I have.
Wow.
Not saying that makes me knowledgeable about the golf swing, but I know...
You know what not to do.
That's true.
I'm not saying you can stop doing it, but you know.
@D_Green with an E at the end, okay. PT is his... Brand. Address. If people want to go on and offer their thoughts on Dave's
swing, that's definitely the way to go.
Or else we'll retweet it and see what the golf pod friends and pod have to say about that. So there you go, Dave Green. Donald Caffrey, not happy. No PGA review pod. Yes, we apologise. Chris Fitzpatrick, question for the pod. Does Rory like golf anymore? Just read Agassi, hated tennis in his autobiography. Hashtag friend of the pod.
I thought that was a good question. I think Rory likes golf. Whether he loves golf as much as he did 5 years ago, I think he's definitely open to debate.
Didn't he say in that interview with another podcast that his perfect day certainly doesn't involve playing golf?
Now, he did say it involves getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning to go to the gym.
Yeah, did, yeah. And then a walk on the beach.
What percentage of golfers, professional golfers, would you say would have golf as part of their perfect day?
That's a very fair question. Mm. And I suspect the answer that you're going towards is the one I would give you, which is not many.
A low amount, I would have thought.
How many of us on our perfect day would come into studio and do a golf pod?
You could be anywhere in the world. Oh, I'll tell you.
There's one thing I'd love to see.
Spending the afternoon with Joe and Dave.
So, I mean, it's
fewer
true
than
of
golfers would put golf into their perfect day.
Yeah, you know, no matter what you do, once you do it every day or once you do it a lot, even if it is a recreational thing for other people, when it's your job, it just changes it. So, but I mean, I think there's something in it. I don't think Rory is obsessed with golf the way Harrington is. Now, Harrington's the extreme, obviously. Mm. But I do wonder...
Is he as obsessed with golf as Jordan Spieth is?
Well, that's the question. We can't answer that clearly.
And then there's the other side of that, which you can easily make an argument for. If he was as obsessed with golf as Jordan Spieth, would he be the player he is?
Yeah.
That's not in his makeup.
Yeah. It's an interesting question. I mean, if we ever get to interview him, it's definitely an avenue you'd like to go down with him. Kevin Staunton, meanwhile, says, "Well, boys, the pods have kept me entertained while driving around the Swiss Alps. You can't beat mountain views and golf talk." What are you doing?
Just having a look at a swing.
Okay, are we back to this? Okay.
I've already got a couple of points, but I'll keep them for the moment.
No, go on. Dave Green, give him. You're having a look at his swing live.
It's very tidy. Very tidy golf swing. It's a very steep take back. He definitely needs to just bring the club around his body a bit more. Almost the opposite of what I used to do. He's right down over his shoulders, and he's very tall over the ball as well.
The arrogance of you to think you can give
probably needs to hold the finish as well.
Dave, don't listen to any of this. Not a word, man.
Yeah, the grip. I would say if you fix the grip, you probably fix
a lot
because his posture as he's about to hit the ball is as if he's about to fall forward almost, which can't be particularly good for your balance.
Yeah, I think there's something off with the grip, Dave, personally.
There's definitely not we can work with, though, Dave.
Oh, there's good stuff there. Yeah. But if your grip's off, you're going to be compensating all the way through. So, the shots of the Swiss Alps, lovely. It made me think, God, I'd love to. Like, it's not that far away, the Swiss Alps. Really, a cheap flight, and I know it's expensive in the area, but man, it'd be worth a few days driving around there on the bike.
No, it wouldn't be cold, would it?
Not in the summer. It'd be a nice temperature, I think.
Not with the right clobber on you.
The right clobber and a bike, you're ready for another. That's the only worry. A lot of bends, you know. You'd have to take your time.
Slippery.
Rushing. In the rain, it could be tricky, yeah. But even a nice convertible. Swiss Alps, you know. Beautiful scenery.
What's stopping you, Joe?
Listen, Dave, that's the question.
It's a question, you know, that could easily be levelled at myself and Nathan, and we can come up with an answer, a whole range of reasons as to what's stopping us. But, Joe, you are your own man.
Listen, I don't have an answer for that,
Dave. You have no ties, Joe.
Well... things are changing on that front.
No ties.
Damien McCauley said, "We've had a lot of tweets in this front. I honestly think the BBC coverage of the USPGA has done more to not grow the game than Sky ever could. Awful, just awful. Aaron Grantham, lads, I'm genuinely shocked by the BBC coverage of the USPGA Championship." There were about 20 other tweets into that effect over the course of the week. The BBC coverage being some of the worst golf coverage I've ever seen.
I tweeted ahead of the tournament that this is why the BBC getting the USPGA was bad news. When I saw the way that they were going to show it behind the red button, which is pretty much impossible to get access to in Ireland, even if you do have Sky, because they got rid of the BBC red button during the Olympics and really never brought it back. It was, and I was absolutely destroyed on Twitter by, fine for you up in Dublin, able to afford Sky Sports. Most people don't see golf from one end of the year to the next. Like, nobody wants to see this.
That doesn't make it good.
This doesn't enhance. This isn't going to grow the game. Firstly, it's not on actual BBC television till 11 o'clock at night.
Yes.
What kid who's thinking of getting into the game is going to go, yeah, I'll stay up especially tonight to hear Peter Alice ramble his way through this.
Yeah.
I felt bad and quite sad for Peter Alice. So we met Peter Alice up in Port Stewart for the Irish Open. He came in and he did a really nice piece with us. And he's a lovely man.
Yeah. And has been one of the great broadcasters in not just sport, not just golf, just one of the great broadcasters over the last 30 years, 40 years.
Like a voice that everybody still associates with golf.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the BBC of all companies could have found a place for Peter Alice, an appropriate place for Peter Alice during their coverage. Maybe not a Ken on the Course type situation, but a nice nostalgia piece.
Yeah.
Not as the lead commentator.
For 3 or 4 hours. Because it went late as well each night because the play was so slow. And the other thing was, I mean, what seems to have happened is the BBC got this deal quite late.
I was just going to try and bring some balance to our assassination of BBC's coverage. So they had to cobble something together very quickly.
Yeah. Now, what they cobbled together ultimately
I don't even think they were there.
Oh, no, they weren't. No. So they had
a massive downgrade. They've no feel for the course. They've no feel for the atmosphere. They've no feel for the crowds.
Yeah.
They've no feel for the tournament at all. They're not hearing from golfers after the round. They're not meeting golfers in the range.
They did have an interviewer post-round. They said they'd one man out there and a cameraman, presumably. And so what they had was Ellie Barber. And I felt very sorry for her because she's the new face of their golf. She's taken over from Hazel Irvine. So she was in some studio at the back end of the BBC. Everybody else gone home, just her looking into a camera. And it seemed to be her job. And it's a difficult thing to do to settle into. She's probably still a bit nervous to read out leaderboards or just to link here and there. She never settled into it because she'd no one to talk to. Felt very alone.
And she was in the room on her own.
Yeah. And so she was handing over.
You'll guess I didn't watch any of it because I have Air Sport.
So she was coming back to her now and again and she was handing over to the commentary team who clearly were like five rooms down in London.
Yeah.
Maureen Medill and Peter Alice. were the two, and a bit of Ken. And there was someone else, but it just honestly felt like Maureen and Alice for hours on end, so slow. And, you know, not being on the course led to some of the most horrific mistakes, like Maureen at one point, unfortunately, because she's a really good broadcaster. She was at one point when Justin Thomas held a putt saying, Matsuyama won't quite know what those cheers are for. And they were in the same group. We're talking about the BBC here.
That is the sort of mistake you only make when you're broadcasting off tube.
Yeah.
Because your concentration levels aren't where they need to be. And also, you don't know what you're going to see.
Yeah.
They're relying on another broadcaster to feed them in the pictures.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've been that soldier, Nathan.
It was very, very, very sad, I would say, as well, for Alice. I mean, I never thought I'd get to the point with him where I thought, ah, you've stayed on too late. People were saying that, like, when he was doing the Open in 2015 and cracking those gags about Zach Johnson's wife getting a new kitchen. But he was still on top of everything to a reasonable extent. Whereas here, it was just actually sad. I remember thinking, this is the nail in the coffin now. He'll never do a tournament again after this because it was so poor.
I wouldn't agree with our tweeter who suggested that it's done more to damage the game than Sky ever could.
Not
because, A, it was live and in full on Air Sport, so I don't know how many people have access to Air Sport, but whoever did could have watched it there. B, in terms of developing the game amongst younger people and getting them to watch it, every young person in the world, or certainly in the developed world, has a Facebook account. It was live and in full on Facebook.
Sure, I think that person is just making a joke that that's how bad the coverage
was. Yeah, and that's fair enough, but I'd say I didn't get the numbers of viewers on Facebook, but everybody's got a Chromecast. Everyone has a 3G. If you don't have a Chromecast,
very middle class comments in this.
Yeah.
If you don't have one, get one. You can stream the entire thing to your television.
What if you can't afford one?
A Chromecast.
Yeah.
Well, what? Put a euro away for each of the next 4 weeks.
Some people don't have a euro.
So you'll have 4 euro. It only costs 4 euro.
No, a euro a day.
A euro a day.
A euro a day.
Wow. 7 quid a week. It does.
Okay, Mr. Big Shot. Disgusting.
Okay, but they can afford phones with which they can use Twitter and to tweet us.
Who's they? The Kulchies. You're unbelievable.
The Muck Savage, you listen to this podcast.
You've spoken on the radio show quite a bit, I think, about the future of sports broadcasting and especially maybe around golf and what we've seen with Sky Sports launching a golf channel and then losing... Firstly, the PGA, a lot of rumours that they may lose the Masters as well. Mm-hmm. It did seem as though the USGA or the USPGA were trying to maybe give Sky a bit of a smack in the face by giving the BBC the rights for next to nothing, it seemed. Yeah. The BBC were just handed them and they had to make do with them. But watching the coverage, it sort of does raise a greater question about growing the game and what sort of coverage you want for golf. Because part of the problem with Peter Alice was, unless you were a top 10 player in the world, you were treated like you were some sort of amateur, that nobody has ever heard of this guy, Kevin Kisner. And maybe he's right. Maybe for the vast majority of sports fans, they don't have a clue who Kevin Kisner is.
True.
But he's been having a brilliant season.
But you see, Alice's problem there is, instead of going, even if you haven't heard of Kevin Kisner, let me tell you about him, blah, 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 blah,
there's
blah.
No effort made.
Alice was just saying, not really familiar with this guy. I mean, he said this about guys that he really should be familiar with routinely across the few days.
Well, I think...
But it's not fair. He's 85, 6 years old. Even I'm getting tired at midnight. He's sitting in there. He's been talking for 2.5 hours.
It doesn't really matter how old he is. He's been paid to do a job and he should have done it well. Whether you're 95 or 35, you're either going to do the job really well or you're not. And if you're not good enough to do it really well, doesn't matter what age you are, you shouldn't be in the commentator's chair.
He just needed to be better supported, as Nathan said. He needed the people around him. And it was a bit unfortunate that the World Athletics Championships were on in London. So you have the likes of Andrew Cotter covering the Athletics, and obviously he would have been the main lead commentator on the golf if the Athletics Championships weren't on. But yeah, I was watching it going, this is bringing the BBC into disrepute.
It's still got big numbers.
Oh, I'm
and
sure.
Far numbers obviously that would blow away the viewing figures for any major on Sky Sports.
There was a great moment where this is the BBC, so all their best people are clearly working on the World Championships. There was a moment where Alice and Ken Brown and Maureen Medill are doing their commentary, and then they stop as the scoreboard comes up on the screen. 10 seconds goes by. Maureen eventually comes in. Leader is Justin Thomas, Hideki Matsuyama, blah, blah, blah. Goes through the leaderboard. Leaves a pause. Ken Brown, I thought Ely was meant to come in there. And then his microphone is frantically pulled down. because he thought Ely Barber in the main studio was coming in to read the leaderboard. But his mic was up the whole time. And he literally says, "Just I thought," because you could tell there was a mishap and that Maureen came in a bit rattled. And then Ken Brenn said after she'd finished, "Oh, I thought Ely was meant to come in there, no?" Who's doing, who's working here?
Yeah, like they are, we are comparing them with the behemoth of Sky. Yeah. And like Sky's coverage of the Open this year was more or less as good as it gets.
Yeah, I agree.
From 6 o'clock in the morning till 10 o'clock at night, informative. They know, they treat the golfing viewer as if they've watched the Northern Trust Open or the Honda Classic, that these are players we're all familiar with, even the American players. Whereas maybe it is going back 30, 40 years where these Americans came over, we never saw them play.
Yeah.
We know all these guys now.
Yeah. Yeah,
we know who Justin Thomas is.
I don't. Yeah. Well. Yeah. So it was. God. It was. It was really sad. Actually. If that. If that is Alice's sayonara, then it's. It's not a good one.
That listener will be delighted. His tweet triggered such a lengthy discussion.
Yeah. There were lots of tweets though. Everyone was talking about it. I mean, it was. It was the most interesting thing about the USPGA, which we can review in a few.
It is a big debate though, because if Sky do lose the Masters,
yeah,
you would wonder. And we've seen it with rugby that. So Sky are putting a huge resources into golf.
Yeah.
Every single Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday night. If they don't have the USPGA, if they don't have the Masters, surely they're going to start questioning, well, what are we doing this for 12 months of the year?
They can't have a Sky.
Why are we sending
channel?
People to Hawaii?
Yeah.
Why are we... It must cost an absolute fortune, golf production.
Yeah, yeah.
And suddenly then you're back to watching on Facebook, and I'm sure that's going to come down the line, but...
Well, who are they sending to Hawaii, though? Like the vast majority of the regular PGA Tour events, are they just not taking the US TV network feed?
In the last couple of years.
Yeah, they've upped it. Like even Northern Trust Open, Nick Daugherty is there, Rich Beam is there. I presume they might have a commentary team there. Because they even did a Northern Trust Open from the range last night.
Okay. Yeah. So they're, and even certainly their studio, you would imagine their studio resources are being curtailed.
But no, maybe it's quite noticeable now when... So, say 5-6 years ago, I thought their studio coverage was quite good because they did most of it back there and Rob Lee was good. Now, when they go back and you see it's Rob Lee and Simon Holmes, it's, oh, the two lads are pretty depressed because everybody else has been having a bit of a jolly.
Why is Robert Lee been sidelined in there?
It's probably his name's Robert Lee.
he's banned from the Southern States.
Oh, dear.
It's very strange.
Yeah, I think there's something funny going on there because Robert Lee, I think, is very good. Anyway. Tim Barger's been out there a lot lately.
Tim Barger would go to Hawaii.
He would go to Hawaii.
He would go to the Sony Open and he'd be there doing the post-round interviews.
Sarah Sturk is out there a lot now. So they've upped it for sure. Anyway, I mean, it must cost a fortune. So anyway, other stuff. Neil B sent a picture of himself watching the PGA Championship live on an Emirates flight from Dubai to Bali. Better coverage than the BBC. I mean, amazing stuff, technology. He was having a great time. First class.
Obviously.
He's a Golf Weekly listener, of course.
We have a lot of ABC One listeners. That's why they like you, Dave.
The only people involved that aren't ABC One are the people who put it together.
Yeah, we're the only people who can't afford candidates involved
to go first class are us.
Yeah, we get free stuff. Yeah.
Well, we're catering to the people that we would like to be.
Yes.
Yeah. We're an aspirational podcast.
Ross Marr says, I'm listening to the pod on my way back from Charlotte to Atlanta. Some roars in the back nine today. # friend of the pod. # Larry for the Masters. We'll talk about Shane Larry today. Jonathan Kennedy, one of the Kennedys, a proper. I mean, he's the A of the ABC One's demographic. Jonathan Kennedy, so nice when it's in Euro. This will help play for my golf at Waterville. He had a bet on Justin Thomas. Very sizable bet on Justin Thomas. Good odds as well. Connor O'Riordan points out that Louis Westhuizen now has a grand slam of second places in all majors. Always a great each-way bet, though. Yeah, did you see this? See his video?
Yeah.
Yeah, very good. Louis Westhuizen, he was
singing on his private jet.
Yeah, singing on his... Yeah, it's not a tragedy. But he was miming to Adele. But it was funny. It's something about bouncing back or I'll get over it or something. Because, second.
It's impressive.
In every single major. He's off.
Lucky he has that one.
I've come to appreciate his swing more and more. It's gorgeous. For a little man.
Yeah.
He is
a lot. Most people you think end up being taller than you expect. Louis Westhuizen is a lot smaller than you expect.
So small when you see him.
It's so smooth. It's actually not the kind of swing that you see too often anymore.
No.
But at least he has won a major. So he's not like the bridesmaid.
Ricky Fowler.
In perpetuity. And he's not Ricky Fowler. But the other thing is, how many of those second places did he really lose that particular major? So, like, certainly he wasn't. I didn't think he was ever looking like he was going to be winning the PGA Championship. When he lost the Masters the year Spieth won it, despite having an albatross on the second, he was never really in contention on the back nine. So none of them were kind of thrown away, by, or not thrown away, but, you know, lost to a massive putt that was held on 18 or anything.
In a playoff on in 2015, wasn't he? At the Open at St Andrews. Wasn't it him, Spieth and Zach Johnson?
Spieth didn't make the playoff.
I might remember it.
It was a three-man playoff, though, wasn't it?
I feel like it was.
I can't remember who the third guy was.
We'll press on. Joseph Blake says the PGA Championship. So we were talking, Dave, about would Rory trade in five PGAs for one Masters and some ridiculous with various combinations. It was a slow news take. And Joseph Blake points out the PGA Championship has the strongest field, though. It's the top 100 players in the world automatically qualifying. So it's a lot stronger than the Masters. So maybe that's a fair point, but still doesn't have the prestige. Patrick, big fan of the pod. You mentioned Waterville a while back. I couldn't recommend it highly enough. Hashtag gem, hashtag friend of the pod. I've never... Waterville, no.
It's not a hidden gem, though, isn't it? Is it? Like, it's heralded as one of the great links courses in the country.
Well, he didn't say hidden gem. He said just said gem. And James Sheehan, who's a friend of the pod, was off to try and replicate Sergio on the 16th, 18 years ago now. He was at Medina. I mean, very impressive entrance. He sent a picture of Medina. Big wall tunnel kind of thing going on. It's,
exclusive.
Impressive, yeah. It's the kind of place we couldn't afford, Nathan.
Unless someone wants to bring us.
Yeah. So they are your tweets for this week. So the FedEx Series is underway as of today. Northern Trust Open, top 125 players on tour are there. Top 100 proceed to the next event and so on till 30 players end up at Eastlake in Atlanta. Rory McIlroy is the defending champion. So he's much in demand. He's been doing the press conferences and he was speaking to CBS Breakfast, Nathan, was it? These shows in America get billions of viewers, don't they?
Yeah. Big deal. I don't know if it's Good Morning America, but it's the CBS version of Good Morning America. He was in Yankee Stadium.
I saw this. So he was hitting some balls.
So he sat down with one of the presenters. She asked him, how's your health, Rory?
My health's good. It's not quite as good as it could be.
What is it? What's the...
It's an inflamed rib joint. So it's your CV joint, connects your rib to your vertebrae. And there's a little inflammation in there.
Is it pain or does it affect your play?
It's more pain. It doesn't affect my play. It doesn't affect my swing. It's manageable. It's totally fine. I think it's been blown up a lot more than what it should have been.
I know you mentioned that you're going to play in the playoffs and then take some time off.
That's the most likely plan at the minute. It's a little bit up in the air, but I'm going to play the FedEx Cup playoffs, hopefully play through the Tour Championship. I'm definitely going to play in the Dunhill Links Pro-Am in St Andrews with my dad at the start of October. We've been earmarking that one for a while. We're both really excited about that. And then after that, I will probably take some time off. I think it's the necessary course of action to take if I want to be 100% going into next season.
Going into Augusta?
Going into Augusta as well, yeah. Yeah, look, Augusta and the Masters is a huge thing on my radar. It's the only major that I have left to complete the set. And it's cool now in golf, there's three people that now have a chance to win the career Grand Slam. You know, it's me at Augusta, Phil Mickelson at the US Open, and then Jordan Spieth at the PGA. So we all have a chance of doing something pretty special and joining that elite group of guys. There's only been five guys ever to complete the career Grand Slam in golf. And there's three current players right now that have a chance to do that, which is, it's pretty cool for the game.
If you look at your game, and if you take some time off at the end of this year, what parts of your game do you really want to work on?
So I think my golf game is built around my driving and my longer iron play, say. That's where I gain the bulk of my strokes. So for me, it's wedge play, and specifically from 100 yards to 150 yards. That's something I really need to work on. And then in my putting, I'm actually pretty good from like inside of 8 feet. I'm pretty good. I think I'm like 72% right now on the PGA Tour, which is maybe in the top 20. So that's pretty good. But from 10 feet out to like 20 feet or 10 to 25, that's where I struggle. And that there are two areas in my game. If I can improve, that'll make a huge difference going forward for me.
And that's not new. That's just always been part of your game.
Sometimes there's other things. Sometimes I've been a good wedge player and my mid-irons have been letting me down, or my long irons or so. But there are two aspects right now that are glaringly obvious that if I can just improve a little bit and devote a little bit of time to, If I can sharpen up in those areas, you know, I feel like I'll have a great run next year and onwards as well.
Oh, very interesting. Very open.
Pretty frank assessment of where his game is at the moment.
Yeah, very good. Interestingly, I looked at just his wedge stats, and believe it or not, as well, I know he mentioned 100 to 150, but and you would have seen it a bit in the last couple of weeks where he's driven the ball a billion miles and been much closer to the green than most of the players. In terms of proximity to the hole, he's actually worse between 50 and 75 yards in terms of proximity to the hole than he is from 75 to 100. You know, so even
it's too close.
I don't know what's going on, but I mean, he's 50 to 75. He's a better chance if he's 100 yards back than he is 60 yards back at the moment. But I mean, his wedge is generally whatever, 160 yards, and he's not as good as he should be. We've seen him too often be the last to go on a fairway and not land his ball inside the two lads who've hit before him on a fairway. And that must be the most frustrating thing.
You should never be first to putt.
I know. How frustrating must that be again and again and again and again and again?
Was it the first three rounds at the PGA he didn't hold a single putt from outside of 10 feet?
Right.
Now, I think Jason Day was probably as bad as him and they were bringing each other down. You do question, and there's no stat to cover it, how his putting affects the rest of his game and the level of frustration he brings off the green as he misses another birdie opportunity after another birdie opportunity.
Yeah,
I
personally think quite a lot, by the way. I think he reaches points in rounds where he's just so fed up and he might just lose a bit of concentration on the drive or on certain long iron shots, because I think there's an element of, well, what's the point? Anyway, you know, so I drive this another one 320 yards down the fairway straight. I'm still going to make par.
And maybe that feeds into what he was talking there about his stats from inside 8 feet. So if you're getting inside 8 feet, you're hitting a brilliant iron shot generally.
Yeah.
So he's walking up to the green, he's buzzing.
Yeah.
And he's got that bit of confidence.
Yeah.
Whereas if he's 15, 25 feet away, he's probably thinking, should have hit that closer. Yeah. How am I going to hold this? I just wonder, is he overly obsessed with stats? Now, he does like to say that he's a real student of the game and the history of the game, and he could tell you every tournament Tiger's ever won. He, after his press conference yesterday, he was apparently going to see Mark Brody, who is the mastermind behind the PGA Tour's strokes gained statistic,
right,
which is pretty much the only statistics that matter right now, whether it's driving, putting, and Rory was mentioning them there. And so Tiger's strokes gained over the entire season, his best season, was over 3 strokes gained on the entire field over the season. Tiger's the only person to have ever done that. 8 times. Rory's best was 2.4 better than everybody in strokes gained in the total category in 2012. So he's going to meet him to see what he can improve in so he can get to over 3 next season. And he reckons he'd win 5 or 6 tournaments if he can do just that.
Will the answer be putting the ball in the hole?
You would assume
so.
I mean,
Rory at the PGA. So here's Rory's stats at the PGA. Strokes gained to the green, plus 11.
Wow.
Strokes gained putting, minus 3.
Wow. I'd love to eavesdrop in that conversation. It's like he's almost meeting this guy to see if there's some way to cheat the stats. But I can't think there is. Just, you know, see what Jordan Spieth does. Just do that.
Yeah, the stats reflect what you're doing.
Yeah, it's very
You can't
strange.
Alter the stats to suit your game.
It's like going to see the guy who does a scoreboard at a game and saying, how do I win more? And he'd say, well, get more goals than them. You know, it's like none of the method is actually there.
Yeah.
None of the process is there.
It's
that's odd.
Like, again, there's just, I don't think I've been on since he split with JP. Like, Harry Diamond's going to continue caddying for these tournaments. But even there, talking about his injury, so he was, even up to last week, undecided whether he was going to just stop now. But now he's decided, well, if I go till after the Dunhill, it seems the only reason he's playing the Dunhill is because, well, himself and his father play. He really enjoys it.
Yeah.
And he'll still have time to have a 3-4 month break before getting back over to California.
He talked a lot in the press conference. I didn't see that CBS interview, but in the press conference, he was far more definitive that he's definitely taking the 3 months off. He consulted with Steve McGregor in Northern Ireland, the sports scientist, who said, you can't do any more damage. It's not one of those types of injuries. So you might as well just play as much as you want. But he was talking about how he's never had 3 months off, and this might be one of the only times in his career he'll get that. And so he's very excited to go and really come back sharp. He's going to work his ass off, was what he was saying. And he thinks this could be absolutely huge for him.
You hope that that is what he does.
Yeah.
And that he doesn't pick up a club for 3 months, but when he does come back,
but he's going to.
But I mean, when those 3 months have elapsed, that he's full of vigor again, full of motivation, can't wait to pick up a club, can't wait to hit the range and spend hours working on his game?
Oh, no,
or does he enjoy the 3 months so much that he's like,
nobody's
I can't
saying,
believe I have to go back to this now.
No, he's saying he's going to be on the range every day in those 3 months.
But why is he taking the 3 months off? I thought that he couldn't practice enough because of the injury.
He has to take a certain period off, and then he should still have the guts of 3 months, he thinks, off. Or else maybe he has to rest for 1 month and then practice for two. But what he was definitely talking about the break as not just my clubs go in the corner and I come back refreshed. It was, I'm going to be on the range every day working my wedges.
Okay, so it's a 3 month layoff from tournament play.
Yes, precisely. But it's 3 months or whatever his body allows once he rests up. But once he gets the all clear, while he'll be on a break from competitive golf, he's going to be practicing his ass off. Trackman, putting. That's the plan.
I hope he comes back next February and his first press conference says, no more excuses.
Well, yeah.
Nothing. Physically, I'm perfect. I can practice when I want. I can play when I want. I'm happy with my caddy. I'm happy with my coach. Everything around my game.
My equipment.
I am ready to go.
Because he's changed his grips this week.
On the putter?
No, on his clubs. He's gone for, I think, he's gone for more circular grips. He felt the fingers were getting, this is Rich Beam and I'm trying to remember the technical aspects of it, but maybe there was more of the grip is a less catchy, or they're smoother and they're more circular, and he felt like on the release his fingers were getting too caught in the club. Very technical stuff, but he's tinkering away at the moment anyway, and he's changed the grips this week on his clubs. You ever try that, Dave?
Tinkering or grip changing?
Grip changing.
Well, no, that would just involve a lot of effort, having to actually go to somewhere to get them redone, and I just couldn't be arsed.
I dare say someone did it for him, but anyway. So that's Rory. Any other thoughts, Marie? I mean, we just hope I really hope he plays well, gets it going, and is there as one of the 30 in Eastlake, because he lit up the FedEx last year. You know, it's amazing.
He did say several times this year that he was 100% fit, that he was able to practice when he wanted.
But you know he's never telling the truth a lot about it.
Well, that's what I mean. So if he does, as Nathan says, come back in February and tell us that he's 100% fit, there's no reason why, or there's a chance that 2 months later, or maybe 2 weeks after the Masters, he'll talk to us about something that was irritating him at the Masters.
That would fit in with the trend of the last 5 years. Matsuyama's there. We'll get on to Spieth and Thomas and some of the other big contenders. Matsuyama's there. I was watching the Northern Trust on the range thing last night in Sky Sports. Rich Beam was there and he was just harking back to Matsuyama's win at Firestone, 61 in the final round. And Rich Beam said that, I know this is almost sacrilegious to say this, but it was the best ball striking display, the best ball striking round I've ever seen. He said, I know I played in the Tiger era, and so I can't say this, but I'm saying it. The Matsuyama 61 on the Sunday was the best ball striking I've ever seen. He's 10-1 joint favourite with Spieth for Northern Trust.
Mm. Like, the 61 was just metronomic. And part of the problem with Spieth is, with Matsuyama is there's so little emotion when he's doing these incredible things. It means maybe if Tiger was striking the ball as well as that and he's holding putts, you know, you're getting the old fist pump, you're getting into it, whereas Matsuyama is just happily getting on with his life, talking to whoever talked to him.
Yeah, that's true. Look, I know he's a friend of mine, but he is boring to watch.
Is there an issue with Matsuyama and closing the deal on major Sundays?
Well, Nathan has some worrying news on his pudding.
Well, this week apparently he's turned up to the Northern Trust with five different putters. Says he'll choose one for him before the first round and he'll stick with that for the week.
He did that interestingly, before the PGA as well. He didn't know in the morning what putter he's going to use.
So the last two tournaments have been the first time he's been inside the top 15 in strokes gained putting in consecutive events.
First time.
The first time. So it seems as though his putting has actually improved over the last few weeks. But here's the stats, and I think this is season-long stats. Strokes gained off the tee, 10th. Strokes gained approach, 9th. Strokes gained around the green, 12th. Strokes gained putting, 147th.
Oh, God. Ouch.
So if you're... And he's not even an average putter. He's a bad putter.
Isn't it just amazing that so many of the best ball strikers aren't just average at putting. They're terrible. By PGA standards. They're such... I think they grow up and they're such good ball strikers. They obliterate the fields growing up, so their putting's never really a problem. And they just don't enjoy it as much, because how could you enjoy hitting the ball 10 feet again and again and again when you're able to
Yeah, there's no fun working on your weaknesses.
No, or putting. Have you ever really enjoyed putting practice?
Well, it's not that I've ever enjoyed it or not enjoyed it.
I've just never done it.
But that says something. I've started practicing putting lately. It's very unenjoyable.
Until you go to 40 feet out and start rolling them in from there.
But it's just
is unrealistic.
You're still as like you practice for an hour. You're still as likely to make a 15 footer as not. You know, it just doesn't give you any real payback or fun. You don't get
the
same.
It doesn't float anyone's boat.
No, it's boring as hell.
If you're getting to the range once a week, or you're getting to practice once a week, I'm not going to spend it on the green on my own, putting balls into a hole and just doing that again and again and again. Well, you can spend an hour ripping drives or not ripping them, as the case might be, but at least you're getting some satisfaction from it.
Jordan Spieth is joint favourite with Matsuyama. He's 49 strokes gained on the green still this year. That's a case where the stats lie because he won the Open with the most ridiculous putts. Mm. But he's still only 49th and he's still second tee to green. But he's likely to catch fire in the greens at any moment.
Well, he's proof of what Matsuyama and McIlroy can do, because Spieth has gone back in terms of his putting. Yeah. So, he still can produce these unbelievable streaks of putting. But you don't need to be, you just need to be average. Yeah. So you look at Matsuyama, he's excellent, 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 piss poor.
Yeah.
Same as Rory.
Yeah.
So, as you've mentioned before, if Rory's 30th strokes game putting,
yeah,
he's probably going to win 4 or 5 times a season.
Yeah. How impressed were we with Justin Thomas, who's 20-1 to win this week? I mean, it wasn't very exciting USPGA, was it?
No.
No.
I forgot who'd won it a few days ago.
Well, we spent so much time in the build-up looking forward, as usual, to imagine if it's Rory and Spieth going down the back nine.
Yeah.
Like, it was sort of your typical PGA Championship leaderboard. A lot of players who've played very well during the year.
Yeah.
Guys who've won tournaments, guys who are having the best years of their career putting themselves in contention. And like Justin Thomas, it's no great surprise that he's ended up as a major winner. Like, the shot
win of the year.
Was it the 16th, the par 3 was the shot of the round, where he took such a risky little draw in. It was pretty boring, though.
It was dull. The most exciting 5 minutes were Jason Day on the Saturday night in 18, where he seemed to lose his mind.
Yeah.
What the hell? I mean,
it's the craziest thing I've ever seen if
JP and Rory had concocted that one, you'd be calling for JP's head.
Yeah.
What was he thinking?
I just wonder, was it a culmination of such a frustrating year, so much stuff going on and off the golf course, realising that you were a PGA champion, and nothing's really running for you now, and it's a bit unexplainable.
Yeah. I wondered if it was the fact that they were out there for 5.5 hours and his brain was just fried.
They should be well used to that.
I know, but 5.5, and that rough was so thick and... Oh,
but all the analysis as it was happening was, even if he hits the most unbelievable shot of all time, even if he were watching this back in 10 years like Bubba Watson at the Masters, even the most unbelievable shot is going to leave him short of the green.
Yeah, he gained nothing.
In the deep rough.
Yeah. He still was hitting his third onto the green. I couldn't believe what's happening.
And like 8 under won it. He was 4 under at the time. Had a quadruple bogey, pushing him back to level par.
He's only 2 or 3 shots off at the time.
Get in at 4 under.
Yeah.
It's peculiar. It's been such a mixed bag, really. The Open and the Masters were phenomenal.
Yeah.
The Sunday on both of those tournaments are up there with, certainly is, I haven't enjoyed a Sunday at Augusta or the Open more than I did the two this year. And then right at the other end of the extreme, you've got Brooks Koepka walking away at the US Open after it was just so beautifully poised with 6 holes remaining. Then the putter just becomes red hot.
Yeah.
And then the PGA Championship, where you're just like, meh.
Yeah.
What I do welcome is, and if Hyun was here and we'd have the cynic, of children running onto the green after their father wins the title.
Mm-hmm.
I do prefer the all their mates hanging around for them. So when Justin Thomas wins, Jordan Spieth is there and Ricky Fowler and Bud Cawley.
Yeah. One of our friends, Emmett Keane, under the illusion his second name is Kane, was saying that he thought that was an indictment of that group. He was saying, well, look, you know, would Tiger Woods be there? Should these guys not be, I know no man's an island, but should they not be killers, ruthless? Mm. Were they cheering each other on? I just don't like the feel of that. And I mean, we sort of disagree with them both on Twitter. It's terrible when two people gang up on one person on Twitter. But I mean, arguably for their age, they're the highest achieving group in the history of the game.
Yeah, and it's clearly not doing them
any harm. No, they're still shooting low numbers.
But you can obviously pick and go, well, look at Ricky Fowler. Ricky's problem is he's too nice.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's no way Ricky Fowler isn't looking at Justin Thomas thinking, that should have been me. Well, Thomas, I need to work a little bit harder.
Admitted he was sick and at the Open watching,
which is brilliant. Yeah. And they're the closest of them all.
Yeah.
And you say, would Tiger have been doing that? Look at Tiger now.
Well, we'll get on to that, Dave. You can look at Tiger in a whole new way soon.
I have.
Oh, dear. Right, okay. Do we have to be careful legally about that?
I don't know.
Longer term, though, from a Ryder Cup point of view, it's gone full circle. Now the American team are the ones who are unbelievably close, whereas so many of the European players either are struggling with their game or struggling with this sort of world tour. We'll probably get on to Shane Lowry as well. One of those, the kind of young group of late 20s, early 30s Europeans really seem to be struggling with life.
Yeah, I think it's good for them to have that group. I think that's making their life far less stressful. I think it's making the tournaments far more enjoyable for them. Loneliness is definitely a big thing on the tour. So just to leave off the Northern Trust Open, then Spieth and Matsuyama are joint favourites. McIlroy is still there, 14-1, with Dustin Johnson and Ricky Fowler. So it's fairly bunched. You've got Spieth, Matsuyama about 10-1, and then you've got McIlroy, Johnson and Fowler all 14-1. Stenson, who won last week, it was very exciting. He played brilliant golf on the back nine to win, was 18-1, is 18-1. Jason Day is 18-1. Brooks Koepka, Justin Thomas, and on we go. John Rahm, 28s.
I like Daniel Berger.
Do you?
Well, again, he's sort of part of that little clique. And quite often you can be inspired by your mate doing something brilliant and you think, ooh, I'd like a bit of that. Yeah, he's also having a good season. I think he's a good price as well. He's about 40-1.
On a mention of the Wyndham, we should probably throw in a mention for Seamus Power, who had such a disappointing finish to his PGA Tour season. He fell foul of probably the most unfortunate rule there is when it comes to not playing the weekend. Makes the cut, puts himself, albeit after a really disappointing Friday, puts himself in a position where, or after a really disappointing Saturday, in a position where a run on Sunday and he's going to keep his card.
Yeah.
And then just the vagaries of this new cutting system, if you want to call it that, made cut, did not finish, and he's flying home on the Saturday. It's a disaster.
It's terrible. We'll talk to Seamus Power at some stage in the next few weeks and see what his plans are, and we'll talk about a few other bits and bobs, including Larry next. Yeah, so it is tough on Seamus Power as well. Could have been, I mean, so you're so close, could have been so much better for him. And then Larry, I mean, difficult for Larry. I know we all reacted kind of similarly outraged when Ivan Yates said to Shane, let's call a spade, you're not playing well. I think that was because he was having a good Irish Open and he was showing a bit of form, and it's an overly blunt thing to say. And there's nuance and everything. But I suppose the fact is, by the high standard Shane has set, this has been a very, very disappointing year. So he's finished outside the top 125. That was not the plan at the start of the year, to say the least.
He made a bit of a run for us over the weekend, still finished 127th. Now he does have the luxury of still having his exemption from winning the Bridgestone. Definitely, there seems to have been a change in his attitude as well over the last few weeks. So when we spoke to him at the Irish Open, he was definitely talking a good game, felt his game was in a good position heading into his favourite time of the year. Certainly, since the PGA, he's been down on himself. Like, he has been obviously looking at his entire setup, talking about moving to America for maybe six or five months. Next summer, getting a house in Florida that he's struggling with all the travelling. And you can understand that. I remember seeing him posting on Instagram, I think it was the Monday after the Open, where, again, the Open hadn't gone in any way that he had expected, and he was on a flight to Canada for the Canadian Open. And I just remember thinking, where's the motivation?
Yeah.
You got a young kid at home, and I know he sort of talks to that about being the motivation. You want to go out there and make them proud. And,
no, but you want to be with your kid, don't you?
But you've just had this pretty grueling 3-4 week build-up to the Open. You probably just want a break, and you're having to get, you know, you need the points for the FedEx Cup. You're having to go to Canada by yourself. It's not what you want professional sport to be.
No. I think it's a good decision trying America.
Mm.
I really do. And the other benefit as well is that his wife Wendy and child presumably can travel to a few more events with him. It's an entirely different prospect when you're in Florida and there's an event 2 hours up the road. Rent a house there for the week, as opposed to, you're not going to fly from Ireland, obviously, for a tournament. But, you know, I guess with Larry, it made so much sense for a long time to be home, because he's such a home bird and loves his mates and gets on great with them, and they energise him and stuff. But you definitely transition into that point where your family and your children are the most important. They're the thing you really miss. And I think it'll really benefit him. I hope so.
But you're away for such long periods, especially when you are playing in America. It's not, even if you have a good week, you've no one to celebrate with.
Yeah, him and Harrington, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what happens there? If you have a good week, you get to go home and celebrate it with them. If you have a bad week, I mean, we all, well, I would say we all, you net, maybe just not yet, Joe, yourself and myself, no matter what kind of a mood you come home in, I mean, your kids do not care what you've done that day. If you've won a WGC event or if you've stunk the joint out and missed the cut by 10 shots,
yeah,
the reaction is still going to be the same when you get home. So,
especially young Dylan McIntyre, who's an absolute terror.
He is. He's terrorising the household.
Let me put that on the record. You can play this back to him in a few years.
If I come home in bad humour because I've made a mess of a commentary, he doesn't care.
No, he's going to make your life worse.
If I've made radio magic, he doesn't care either.
He's still going to make your life worse.
Exactly.
Keith Pelly was at the Irish Open as well with us a few months ago. And I mean, look, I did want to ask him, but I didn't think it was that big a deal. But so we asked him about the website.
Mm.
Basically, Keith, it's really crap. What story?
We changed our app and we changed our website based on the fact that it wasn't going to be able to accommodate long term what we wanted to add as far as content. And it's 5 years old, and in the world of technology, that's a long time.
Yeah.
You know, we without getting too deep into it, we tried it and trialed it 4 weeks prior to it, rigorous. And unfortunately, when we launched, our provider that had built it had just built it wrong. And so we've had a tough 4 weeks, 5 weeks with our app and our website. I am convinced, you know, as we've technology bugs are about 2 or 3 weeks from completely being ironed out. We're adding more and more content every day. We're making some changes to the design. I guarantee you, we will not have this conversation in 2 months. You will say in 2 months, your app and your website, oh, sensational. And if not, then I'll come back here and you can absolutely go at me for a couple
okay,
hours.
Okay, deal. So that's come back to bite him in the ass. I mean, I promise you, I'm sure he's apologized and they've had to completely ditch the new website. I mean, like, bin it, gone, done. Gone
I'm
back
glad
to the
they've
other
bit
website.
The bullet as early as they have, because it was utter shit.
Hang on, bit the bullet as early as they have. It's been like 10 months of this crap.
Oh, but like it could have been 10
no,
years.
No. They only launched it. They only launched a new website
in May.
Wentworth.
Oh, sorry,
in May.
It feels like 10 months.
It does. But clearly the plan for the revamp was, so we're in a digital age and you can go and watch your European Tour events on your app. And
yeah.
But 90% of people who go on, they want one thing.
The scores.
The scores.
Easy.
The leaderboard.
Yeah.
In as easy a manner as possible.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think he was pretty honest at the Irish Open saying, look, hands up.
It's crap.
This has gone horribly wrong. They've probably been, and clearly been trying to fix it over the last couple of months, and that wasn't possible, so.
I presume they get a full refund.
I'm surprised they haven't come out and hung the company.
They probably knew what they were getting. I'm sure there was various sign-off stages during the process whereby the European Tour said, okay, we're happy with that, let's move to the next step.
Yeah.
When I was making my way in radio all those years ago, on a Monday morning, there was absolutely nothing to talk about after you got past, say, 11 or 12 o'clock, you're reading bulletins. I used to always log on to europeantour.com and they would have this Adobe file that had the full latest world rankings after what had happened on the Sunday across the various tours. You could scroll way down into the 600s or 700s, find out where all the Irish golfers were. That would make up your story. I went on last week to find the latest world rankings, and after 10 minutes I gave up. I could not find them anywhere on the website.
And when you were making your way in radio, was that a happy time in your life?
Some days were better than others.
Do you miss those Mondays?
The people of the southeast of Ireland at 1 o'clock on a Monday going, oh, I wonder where Damien McGrain is ranked.
Has Pory Carrington moved up one or two or dropped a couple of places?
Like, breaking
McGrain
news.
Up two places.
It filled
312.
35 seconds of a 2 minute bulletin when there was nothing else there. The world rankings, which you would imagine is a very important part of any golfer's knowledge, not on the website. If they are, maybe they are, but I could not find them.
Well, maybe you could go on worldgolfrankings.com.
Yeah.
And they have their own website.
They've got their own website.
I was happy to go through the European Tour because I was getting leaderboards.
Dave
I was getting articles.
Man.
Exactly.
Okay, so some other little bits. It seems the European Tour are thinking about buying the Ladies European Tour. This is according to The Guardian. The Ladies European Tour is struggling very badly. Sources have confirmed to The Guardian that no formal discussions have taken place between the European Tour and the LET. Oh, we're getting kicked out of here. But Pelly, given the matter serious consideration. And before we go, then, we should just mention the Solheim Cup was very one-sided. You watched a lot of it?
Yeah, I saw most of Friday and most of Sunday. It was too nice was my biggest problem
Where
with
was
it.
Where was the needle?
So Suzanne Pedersen had to withdraw, and she was replaced by Katrina Matthews. She had some sort of a back injury, and Pedersen was obviously going to be the focal point of the American ire after all the controversy last time out. The Americans are just so far superior that they were always going to win this. The foursomes, I think the Europeans won the foursomes over both days, but the four balls
destroyed
7-1.
Oh dear.
So that's why they were absolutely killed. The problem for two problems for the Solheim Cup: you're not watching the best players in the world. Three of the world's top 15 were playing.
Oh, because they're all Asian players now.
Yeah, so if there was a rest of the world team, they would have had 12 of the top 15.
Is there a female version of the President's Cup where Asia crush everyone?
I don't think so.
Okay.
And also, now the standard of golf on the Sunday, it was Lexi Thompson and Anna Nordqvist, who were the two highest ranked players, led out their two teams. Was just absolutely sensational. Some of the golf on the Saturday and Sunday, it was birdie, 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 birdie from both sides.
Right.
But in the foursomes in particular, it was so bloody slow.
A lot of, you were saying, caddies lining
caddies lining up putts from both teams. Come on!
Yeah.
They need to ban that.
Kill that. Just
like, it's adding an extra 2-3 minutes and on every hole.
I think it's an unfair advantage.
Massively.
If you're not able to read a green, and you've got the best caddy at reading a green, and you're beating somebody who is able to read a green quite well, better than you would be able to, and they don't have a caddy who can read a green. I just think this is nuts.
But they don't even attempt, is the other thing.
Yeah.
A lot of them just stand back, and they let the caddy take over, and the caddy will go,
I don't know how they disallow that rule, because obviously a caddy consults with the player on lots of things, and a caddy can easily go up and look at the green early and say, quietly, you know, it's breaking two balls to the left. So I don't know how you stop the rule, but this whole down in the hunkers, kneeling down kind of business.
Well, unless they bring some kind of a ready golf rule in, so that there's an interpretation of when you should be ready to hit your putt, and you've got X amount of seconds to
shot
hit
clock.
Your putt.
Yeah, maybe
so some kind of a putt clock.
Yeah.
So if you want yourself and your caddy to line up the putt, you're going to break the shot clock every time, and sooner or later fines and stroke penalties come through.
Never happen.
Next week, we should talk about Billy Payne. We don't have time today.
Yeah.
He has stepped down as chairman of Augusta National Golf Club. Give me the name of the writer.
Jaime Diaz.
Jaime. I just called him Jamie all the time.
I think
Jaime.
Would say Jaime.
Jaime.
Diaz.
Jaime Diaz.
Very good.
Said Excellent. That he's stepping down from arguably the most powerful position in golf.
Yeah.
And his replacement, Fred Ridley, is the first...
Sounds evil.
First chairman of Augusta National to have actually played in the Masters.
Oh, wow.
Played twice, 76, 78. He's a former US amateur champion.
I see Billy Payne being talked about as the most progressive Augusta chairman, so... I mean,
it's all relative.
It's a low base. And then finally,
I've been the best golfer in this room.
Tiger Woods then. So,
how are you going to approach this one?
Well, with
head
just,
on.
With just the facts. So.
We shouldn't really be laughing.
No, this is terrible.
This is disgraceful.
It's disgraceful.
And whatever about him, for Lindsay Vonn, it's...
Rule number one, if you're a celebrity of any kind or in the public eye, don't send dick pics or just naked pics full stop to anyone. Don't take a picture of yourself naked. People can hack your phone.
That's how I live my life.
It seems Tiger Woods...
Best for everybody to say.
Debbie, delete. So it seems Tiger Woods decided to send Lindsay Vonn some naked pictures of himself. That's between them. That's fine. Lindsay Vonn's phone has been hacked. The pictures are available. I can't confirm or deny if Nathan Murphy has seen these pictures and sent them on or not. He hasn't.
Couldn't possibly comment.
Do that. Tiger Woods taking legal action and trying to shut all this down. But it seems that once these photos get out there, it's just impossible to stop. It's a pointless thing. Like, you know, this blew up about a year or two ago. There was Jennifer Lawrence pictures everywhere. Mm. It just look, once one person has them, vroom, they're everywhere.
It's like it's the Streisand effect, isn't it, that Tiger is getting involved in now? That by saying you're going to take legal action, suddenly more people are talking about it.
Yeah.
Suddenly more people are searching for the photos.
Yeah. So they're everywhere. It's
very sad. It's this fellow did not need this.
No.
Like, of all the things that he needed to happen in his life right now.
Right now, yeah.
This is not it.
Do you know why it is serious, okay? Because, and we're laughing, and I actually think that's wrong, even though it's funny. Because, like, this guy's been taking anxiety medication. He's not in a great place in his life. Mm. Could you imagine how you would feel if you're already struggling with your anxiety and this is after happening to you? He's going to be in a dark place over the last week or two. It is dreadful. But such a dumb move. Don't do the pictures.
Well, particularly like given the lessons that are there to be learned from people like Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen some of the highest profile celebrities in the world make this mistake, and yet people are still following in their footsteps. I just don't understand it.
Rory, during that interview with the morning show in America, said he'd been talking to Tiger. Not about this. That wasn't brought up, funnily enough. But that Tiger is back on the putting green, doing a little bit, but he's still a long way from being able to swing a club.
Sad to hear that, really. He was pictured in the last couple of weeks with his children, I'm not sure was it to do with him, and some friends with Suarez and Messi.
Yeah.
I thought he looked really fit. And he was pictured with Justin Thomas recently.
He went out for dinner.
Yeah.
And Justin Thomas said going for dinner with Tiger was nearly as good as winning the PGA.
He was very much his hero growing up. He practiced the club spin, or the, what do you call it?
Twirl.
But I thought in the picture with Justin Thomas, he looked fantastic, Tiger. Looked better than he had in years.
He's in good nick.
Right. We're pretty much done, are we?
I think so.
We could be done full stop. We could be done forever. We're back next week, I guess. FedEx is on. We were hoping Shane Larry might be on the show this evening.
I haven't sat in our production meeting yet. There is a chance.
So we'll put that in next week. Alrighty, we're done. Good luck. All my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here in Dardanelle, all picket now. Little J.D. Starter kid right here.